We're now starting our study of Parshat Lech Lecha. Now, most of us in this room, if not all of us, are familiar with Parshat Lech Lecha. Avram is chosen to be the father of the Jewish people. He leaves his home and begins his journey in Eretz Yisrael. What we're going to focus on today is re-examining this Parsha with totally fresh eyes. We're going to go through the story and look at it as though we're reading it for the very first time. As we go through it, we're going to outline it section by section and ask what are honestly some very basic and glaring questions on this narrative that we likely took for granted because we learned these stories when we were kids. Once we've successfully outlined the Parsha and are totally confused by it, after reading it with fresh eyes, then we'll introduce one fundamental concept today, which is going to honestly be our foundation for the rest of our study of Sefer Bereishit. And over the coming Shirim, we're going to work to add key concepts that are going to draw this Parsha together and continue to add fundamental building blocks upon which Sefer Bereishit and the Jewish people themselves will be built. So let's jump in. The first source that you have in your seat, source number one, we saw last time, but I wanted to do it again because it's both the conclusion of our discussions in Parshat Noach, but it's also very clearly the foundations of our discussions in Parshat Bereishit, in Parshat Lech Lecha. We said, based on the Midrash, that Hashem sifted through the sands of history for 10 generations until he finally found the pearl that was lost in the sand, until he found Abraham. That's this Midrash again in source number one, which gives the mashal of a melech that was going from place to place. V'nafla margalit me'al rosho, he lost a pearl from his crown, so he sent out his servants to go and sift through the sands, and then finally they find it and bring it back to him. Kach amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm in the third line, so too did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, Matzore chayali liyacheis shem arpachshad shlach ever peleg re'u sirug nachor terach. Why am I going through at the end of Parshat Noach all of these 10 generations? Ela bishvilcha, for you Avram Avinu, because I'm sifting through the sands of history to find the, as we defined last time, the paradigmatic individual, the individual of all times, to find Avraham Avinu, who would be the father and give birth to the 71st nation, to the Jewish people. That's why it says that I sifted until I found umatzata et livavon ne'eman lefanecha, till he found he, meaning Avraham, whose heart was truly ne'eman before Hashem. Now that Avraham has finally been found, Hashem speaks to Abraham and tells him the first words that are said to any Jew, as we also discussed at the end of Parshat Noach last time. He tells him, Lech Lecha. Hashem tells Abraham to go off and begin Jewish history. More so, Hashem tells Abraham, Lech Lecha mi'artzecha, u'maladetcha, u'mebeit avicha, el ha'aretz asher ara'eka. He tells him to literally leave everything behind and establish himself as being the 71st nation, the Jewish people, as it says in the next pasuk in source number 2, Ve'escha l'goy gadol, and I will make you into a great nation, meaning the 71st nation. Go and start the journey of the Jewish people. Leave everything behind. In the same way, almost, it's which is really the undercurrent. We're talking about how Parshat Lech Lecha is going to be the foundation for the rest of the Sefer. But the undercurrent, really, of Sefer Bereishit, as it seems to me clearly brought out by my Rebbe, is the issue of selecting. Right? After Adam and Chava leave Gan Eden, we take 10 generations and we select everybody away till we find who? Noah. And then once Noah comes and starts the new world, we select everybody away until we get to Abraham. And that's going to be our continued theme. What's going to happen next? Not Yitzchak. That's not what happens next. Well, selecting between Yishmael and Yitzchak. Selecting between Yaakov and Esav. It's all an issue of selecting, of finding the people who are going to, and first finding Abraham, who's going to be the 71st nation, as is defined here. That nation which is going to be the source of bracha, and then continuing to ask the question, who is going to continue to carry the bracha and the bechora? Who is going to be he who is that carrier? Selecting away until we find each individual, until the paradigmatic, ultimate person is found, until Yaakov Avinu becomes Yisrael is found, and then his children also, again, carry that bracha. Well, those are all things that we're going to develop. I went way off script there, but we're going to continue to develop those ideas all the way through Sefer Bereishit. How did we get there? Because Lech Lecha, which is both the sifting away, the sifting out through the sands of history and finding Avram, but also now Avram is being told, select yourself. Remove yourself from everything else. Me'artzecha, me'molaretzecha, me'beit avicha. Leave everything behind and go and start fresh. I will take you to that place which is where you're going to build that 71st nation. Again, it could not be more clear that Avram needs to leave everything behind. And so Avram goes to Eretz Canaan. Who does he take with him? Sarah. Well, Sarah he needs to take with him because it's hard to start a nation without a husband and a wife. Makes things more challenging. Ishtok gufo. But what's odd is what Bracha said. Lot. Abraham, Sarah, and Lot, the ultimate third wheel. Right? Like, what's happening there? He's told to select himself out from everybody and everything. Pasukei, source number 2 in your sheets. Perikud Pasukei. Vayikach Abraham. Kasher Dibir Elav Hashem. Vayilech Ito Lot. And Lot comes along. So our first question is why? Why is Lot coming along? Lot doesn't belong. Lot shouldn't be there. If he's supposed to select himself away from everything, Lot should be included. So if we're outlining the parsha, we call the first part left of thumb with our question about Lot. Good. Let's continue in the parsha. Hopefully we have chumashim as well, not just the source sheets, because this is a chumash shir, right? We happen to be in Parshat Noach this week. Parshat Lechacha this week, which is nice, but that's a nice moment of overlap with the chumash shir, so you have your chumashim with you. Take a look inside what happens next in the parsha. No, this is not a deep question. I'm not searching for something. There are huge block paragraphs of stories. What is the next story in Parshat Lech Lecha? Right, as you all said, what happens next in the Parsha is Abraham arrives in Eretz Canaan, he settles there, and then immediately after that, there's a famine in the land that's so severe that Abraham has to go down to Mitzrayim. When he gets to Mitzrayim, he's so worried that he's going to be killed so that somebody can steal Sarah from him, that he has Sarah say that she's his sister. Paro, in fact, does take Sarah. God sends terrible afflictions upon Paro's household. And then when Paro realizes what happens, he sends Abraham, Sarah, and Lot out of Egypt with tremendous wealth back to Eretz Canaan, back to Eretz Yisrael. What's weird about this story?
He gets punished for telling
the story's weird. God says, Lech lecha, mi'artzecha, mi'latzecha, mi'beit avicha, la'artzerecha, I'm going to show you this amazing great land, go! What does he do? He goes! And what happens? He then gets kicked out! What is that? Why is God doing that? These are simple questions on the story. God says, go, and I will show you where to go. He gets there, he comes to Beit El, he builds a mizbeach, all is good enough for like 5 minutes. And then there's a famine, and God basically sends him to Mitzrayim. And not only does he send him to Mitzrayim, but it's not like he's staying there for very long. In a very short period of time, everything falls apart, and then Paro's like, get out! And Avram's like, great! So he goes back where he came from, and we're right back, we came full circle. We didn't even lose Lot along the way, we didn't even drop the dead weight. Right? So what happened there? Why did we go out to Mitzrayim? No answers yet. Only questions. No answers yet, only questions. Only questions. So two is, with the inadequate marker that I found in the room, because I forgot to bring the marker. That says me trying. Okay. Now that Avram and Lot both have a lot of cattle and a lot of sheep that they got from Mitzrayim, their shepherds begin to argue over grazing land. How do they resolve this? They split up. And Lot goes to Sodom, and Avraham sees where he is, and then everything is good. Why is that weird?
Why
did
he have to take it?
Yeah! Lot shouldn't have come. Lot sticks around. We got to assume if Lot is sticking around, there is a deep, meaningful, intrinsic, imperative reason why Lot needs to be with Avraham. Except that two paragraphs later, you know what happens? Lot leaves Avraham. So what was the point of all of that? Why bring Lot along in the first place if Lot is going to literally two paragraphs later separate and go their own way? I'm not going to write this. It's not an actual marker. But section number three is, part three of our story is Avraham separating from Lot. What's next in the Parsha? The War of Kings. The War of Kings. Yes, we're going to put that in also. The next thing that happens is that evidently, in this time, there were 9 major world powers. There were 5 kings, and there were 4 kings. And the 4 kings dominated the 5 kings. The 5 kings said, you know what? We don't like being subjugated to the 4 kings, so we're going to rebel. We're going to break off. Right? It didn't go well. And the 4 kings said, not happening. They fought them. They subjugated the 5 kings once again, took everybody captive, and end of story. Except not. What happens? Avraham gets dragged into the story. Now, Hannah's already pointed out, why does Avraham get dragged into the story? Because of Lot! He finally got rid of Lot, and now Lot is dragging us into the story of the 4 kings and the 5 kings. And besides for that, what was the premise of this parsha? What are the first words? Get away from everything! And so what happens? So Avraham finds himself embroiled in the middle of a world war out of nowhere to save Lot, who shouldn't have gone along! Do we see this story doesn't make any sense? Do we understand that there's nothing that makes any sense here? Avraham Avinu, who's told to separate himself from all other nations of the world, finds himself in the middle of a world war, becomes the deciding factor in the world war, wins the war on behalf of the side that he wants, and all to save our bad old friend Lot, who went to Sodom and probably should have been left behind and forgotten. I got nothing. Right now. We have stuff later, not to worry. I got nothing now. Okay? We'll present answers later. Got nothing now. But that's okay, because then we move on to the next part of the Parsha, where God comes down to Avraham and enters him into a brit. Do you know what that brit is called? Brit Ben Abitarim. Do you know what Brit Ben Abitarim means? The covenant between the parts. Do you know why it's called the covenant between the parts? Because in order to get into this covenant with God, he literally slices 4 animals in half and then walks in between them. That's a thing. Avraham took 4 species of animals. He split them down the middle, put their dead carcasses on either side of him, and walked through them to enter into a covenant with God.
You're butchering the story.
We're just beginning to cook it. Okay. That was for you. So let's give the story a little context, which is only going to make things worse, but at least give it context. Okay, and Brit Ben Abitarim I put on your sheets in source number 3 because Brit Ben Abitarim is going to be a really big turning point for our story. Not today, in the next year, but I at least want to understand what's happening in Brit Ben Abitarim. So Avraham Avinu turns to God and expresses his concern over the fact. What did he come to do? What is he supposed to be? The father of the 71st nation. What do you need in order to be the father of a nation? Children. That's a thing. And so he says to God, what's the deal? I don't have any kids. And so God says, don't worry. I promise you, you will have children. No, this is, now we're going into Brit Ben Abitarim. We're going to unpack that story a little. We're still in Brit Ben Abitarim. Okay. Perek Tetvav Pasuke, Vayutseoto Achutza, God takes Avram outside, Vayomer, and he says, Habeitna Hashamayma, look up to the heavens, Usfor HaKochavim, Imtuchal Isforotam, count the stars, can you even count them? Vayomer, and he says, Ko Yezarecha, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars. Now, Avram Avinu is well beyond childbearing years. Sarah Imenu is well beyond childbearing years. Not only that, Chazal say, based on Sukkim in the end of Parshat Noah, that it's very possible, not only could she not have children, she may not even have a womb. There was no way for Abraham to have children. There is no possible way. And God looks at him and says, I am guaranteeing you, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And Avram Avinu turns around and says, Pasuk Vav, V'hemin b'Hashem. He had complete emunah nakadosh baruch hu, v'yachshaveh alot tzedakah. Tremendous moment of understanding who Avraham Avinu was. Avraham Avinu didn't question God. Avraham Avinu wasn't unsure. Avraham Avinu was well past the point of believing in his doctors. There is no Teva, says Abraham. I spent 70 years finding the God who is in control of all of nature. If God comes down to me and says, I'm having kids, I'm having kids. It's an incredibly powerful concept. The extent to which everything is in Yad Hashem and the emunah, labriyut, the emunah that Avram Avinu had. Then comes the second part of Brit Bein HaBetzarim. God then continues and says to Abraham, Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Elav, he says to him, Ani Hashem asher otziticha mi'or kastim, I am God who took you out of Or Kastim, Vateit lacha ta'aretz hazot lirishta, who took you out and brought you to this land so that you and your children will inherit this land. This land that is beneath your feet right now, Eretz Kanaan, this land will belong to you and your children. And Abraham turns to God and cries and says, thank you, Hashem, for this tremendous gift. As Abraham would. Except none of you are looking in your chumashim, and that's absolutely, positively not what happens. Take a look inside. What happens? Abraham turns around and says, Vayomer. Vayomer Adonai Elohim. Bama'i daki arishana. He turns to God and says, whoa, you just said that my kids are going to inherit this land? How do I know? B'me'ida, how do I know? Is this the same Abraham? These are like two psukim apart. God says, I am going to break the laws of nature and in your 90s give you a child despite the fact that your wife can't. He's like, cool, you're God, you could do anything. He goes, I'm also going to give you this land forever. And he's like, prove it. What happened? What happened to Abraham? How is that his response? There's no consistency whatsoever. The miraculous thing, okay, fine. The non-miraculous thing, he becomes Jewish and needs to know why and how. What happened? Worse, God seems to validate his question. So we really need to understand Abraham's question now because God responds. Keep going in the psukim. Vayomer Elav, Ani Hashem Asher Otzikam Yer Kasim. We read that, sorry. Pasuk Tet. Vayomer Elav. He says, okay, fine. You want to know how you and your children will inherit this land? I will prove it to you with the most clear cut, pun intended, with the most clear cut, simple, obvious proof ever that your children will inherit this land. Do me a favor, and I'm just translating, I'm not going to read the words. Go and take four species of animals, cut them in half, put a whole dove at the end, and then I want you to mysteriously walk through those four animals and get to the dove, and that's how you'll know that your children will inherit this land. Right? Thank you, Shinkindi. Right? Or in modern terms, ops. Right? What's going on? How is that a response? Meaning, think that Avraham Avinu's question, I'm exaggerating the story obviously, it's Avraham and everything he says is MS and we're exaggerating the story here intentionally. I never understand Avraham's question. Avraham's question makes no sense. So say to Avraham, your question makes no sense. But why is the response for Avraham to do some sort of voodoo-like procedure and walk through a whole bunch of animals and that's going to answer how he's guaranteed that his children are going to inherit Israel? That is, it says later in the paragraph that you're going to be exiled and then 400 leaders are going to come back, they're a chush gadol and it's all going to be great and you'll inherit the land forever. Pesach going on the board is Brit Bein HaBetarim. We have a lot of questions on Brit Bein HaBetarim. What's the difference in Abraham's response? And how is the Brit Bein HaBetarim itself, this walking through the animals, a response to a question on how Abraham will know that his children will inherit Eretz Yisrael? Following the logic of our narrative, okay? God just promised Abraham that he would have children and that his children would inherit Eretz Yisrael. So of course, what comes next in the Parsha? The birth of Yitzchak. What obviously is not going to happen next in the Parsha? The birth of Yitzchak. Instead, what's going to happen? Sarah can't have kids, which we knew! Nothing changed! And in fact, it got so bad that now Sarah gives up and says, I've got a great idea! Right? Don't try this at home. I've got a great idea! I have this Egyptian Shifcha. You marry her and have kids with her, and it'll be like having kids with me, and everything will be great! Give Hagar Hamitri to Abraham. Wouldn't you know it, Hagar does get pregnant, and immediately Sarah flips out. She is so terrible to Hagar that Hagar flees and doesn't know what to do with herself, and an angel has to come down and tell Hagar, you will have a child, the child's name will be Ishmael, all will be well, go back home. I don't know what question to ask. God just said, you are going to have children. We know the child is going to be Yitzchak. So then why don't we let them have children? Why not let him have Yitzchak? Why are we taking this detour and producing Ishmael? What's going on? And that's ignoring the entire concept of being built up through a Shifcha and having children through them and accounting to you. The whole thing there is wacky. But it's what we learned when we were in kindergarten, so it makes sense. To add insult to injury, we come to the final paragraph, the final section of the Parsha. The second brit between God and Abraham, where in the context, God introduces the concept of brit milah. And in these psukim, God promises not just that Abraham will have children and not just that his children will inherit Israel. What does he promise? Very explicitly. Keep with the very open, clear, blatant questions. What is promised in this paragraph? We're in the last paragraph of the Parsha. Perek Yizayin. I'll read you the pasuk. Go to Perek Yizayin. Pasuk Tetvav. Vayomer Elokim al Abraham. God says to Abraham, Sarai ishtacha, lo tikra et shema Sarah, Sarai, ki Sarah shema. He changes Sarah's name from Sarai to Sarah. Uverachti ota, and I will bless her. Vigam natati nimena lecha ben, and I will give you a child through her. Uverachtiha, and I will bless her. Vayita legoyin, umalchei amin nimena yiyu, and many kingdoms will come from her. What did God just promise here? That a child through whom? Sarah specifically. Vayipol Avraham al panav, vayitzchak, and Avram falls on his face and laughs. Vayomer b'livon, he says in his heart, halevein mea shana yivaleid v'im Sarah havat tishim shana teleid. Are we really going to have a child at this old age? And he is so excited because he believes that God is going to give him a child even despite their old age. Vayomer Avraham el Elokim. But then Avraham realizes something. What did God just promise? He promised a child through Sarah. And that everybody, and that again, we'll talk about this more as we move on in Sefer Bereishit, that bracha, the bracha which Abraham holds will be transferred from him to the child of Sarah. And if the whole point is to continue on the line, what did Abraham just realize happens as soon as Sarah is going to have the chosen child? Not the wrong one, but that Ishmael has no function in this context. Ishmael has no function. And so he then falls on his face and says, "Vayom Abraham el Elokim, lo Yishmael yichal fanecha." Let Ishmael live, because he realizes that Ishmael suddenly has been written out of the picture. Vayomer Elokim, and God responds, "Aval Sarai shtecha yoledet bein." She's going to have a son. The karat at Shmo Yitzchak, and I'm telling you now, his name is going to be Yitzchak. Vakimoti et priti ito, and I'm going to keep my covenant with him. Lebrit olam zara charav. And then he says, "I'm also going to do for Ishmael." What's crazy about this? It makes everything worse. This whole story is so crazy. God says, you are going to have children. Who's the child that we want? Yitzchak. Who do we not get? Who do we get instead? So then God says, now that you have Ishmael, what am I going to promise you? A child through Sarah. And what's going to be his name? Yitzchak. And who's going to carry on the torch of the Jewish people after you? So what is Ishmael? That's on you. What is Ishmael doing? There isn't even, you don't even get a chance to breathe. We should have gone directly from Brit Bein Abitarim to the birth of Yitzchak. Why is it that we then detour and have Ishmael, and the second after we have Ishmael, we enter into the covenant with Brit Milah, and the covenant with Brit Milah where God then promises specifically a child, specifically through Sarah, whose name is going to be Yitzchak, and who is going to continue on instead of Ishmael? Why do we have Ishmael? That's Parsha Lech Lecha. Anybody happy with this story?
Yeah.
I'm not. I have lots of questions.
Clearly.
I have lots. Both ways. Okay. At this point, we do have an outline of the parsha, even though it's not on the board. Hopefully it's in your sheets. We have an outline of the parsha, but we also have a lot of questions, and that's a good thing. Torah is infinitely deep, and we can't take these stories for granted. In fact, the questions are often more important than the answers. Appreciate these questions and think about them. As we go through these shirim, we will offer an answer to most of these questions and build up our narrative, but these questions are more important than the answer that we're going to give. So over the next three shirim, and we're going to go through each section of the parsha methodically, and as we do, we're going to introduce many fundamental concepts that will both draw this parsha together, and super important, they're going to lay the groundwork for what we're going to build over the course of the entire sefer. And what we're going to do now for the last 10 minutes is we're going to introduce our first concept, which will address the opening paragraphs, and is going to be perhaps our most foundational concept of Sefer Bereishit. You guys ready to jump in?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do it. Our first concept is an incredibly important principle that comes from the Ramban. It's attributed to the Ramban. This Ramban is going to create a framework again for how we're going to examine all of Bereishit going forward. We can say this confidently because the Ramban himself identifies this principle as being essential to understanding Sefer Bereishit. If I had a marker, I could write it on the board. The concept is four words long. Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim. Yes, it is, because it's the concept that we're dealing with today. Meaning, the questions are perhaps more important than the answers, but the concept we're addressing today is Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim. So let's understand what this means by seeing the Ramban inside. You have it on your sheets in source number 4. Says the Ramban, from very much toward the beginning of this parsha, Omer lecha klal, and for those who know me or have been to the Midrashah before, or have been to Derech Hashem Shir before, you know that the word klal is a loaded word. Right? I'm going to give you an overarching principle to hold on to, which will give context to a tremendous amount of Torah. Omer lecha klal. And then he emphasizes, Tavinoto bechol haparshiot habaot. Understand this in all of the parshas that are coming forward. From this point to the end of Sefer Bereishit, you're going to need this klal, says the Ramban. Be'inyan Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, from now through the end of Sefer Bereishit. And in case you weren't clear, Behu inyan gadol. The Ramban talking now. When the Ramban says something like that, you shake. Behu inyan gadol. His kiruhu rabotinu bederech tzara. Our sages said this in a short way, the Omro, and they said, and for the sake of intellectual honesty, I actually spent a whole day of the summer just trying to clarify this because it isn't 100% clear. The Ramban is going to extrapolate from a Medrash Tanhuma, but these are not the exact words of Chazal, which is why I'm going to continue to refer to this principle as the principle of the Ramban. But the Ramban lays forth the following principle, which is very closely associated with the Medrash Tanhuma. Kol ma she'ira le'avot, everything that happens to the avot, which later on in history becomes which words? Ma'ase avot, right? It's interesting also that even the phrase isn't really from the Ramban. The phrase actually develops much later. The first time it appears is hundreds of years later in the Rashba. But the fundamental principle of the Ramban is as follows: Kol ma she'ira le'avot siman lebanim. Everything that the avot go through is a siman for the children. What will happen to the children? By adding in all of that background about the Medrash Tanhuma and about the Rashba and all these things, I don't want to take away from this. This principle is a principle of the Ramban based on the Medrash Tanhuma, and it is critical. Everything that happens to the avot lays the foundation, plants the seeds, paves the road for what will happen with their children generations later. V'lachin, therefore, says the Ramban, Ya'arichu haktuvim b'sipur hamasaot v'chafirata be'erot u'shara mikrim. And that's why the stories go on in telling us about all of their journeys and even about the digging of the wells and about everything that happens to them. And a person could incorrectly think that these things are extraneous and have no purpose. Why do I care specifically what happened to Abraham? Why do I care specifically what happened to Yitzchak? Why do I care specifically what happened to Yaakov? And especially in the stories that don't seem to impact Jewish history. He says, "V'kulam ba'in lamed al ha'atid." Every single word, every single detail in every single story about Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is teaching us about what will be for the future of the Jewish people. He kasher yavo hamikra le'navi mishloshet ha'avot yidbonei mimenu hadavar adigzar lavo lezaro. Because everything that comes to these neviim of the three avos, we have to contemplate in what way it's going to cause a gezerah, cause again to pave the way and set the stage for what's going to happen to their children. I recommend reading through the whole Ramban here, but skipping to the end of the underline toward the bottom of the page. That's why Kadosh Baruch Hu brought him to Eretz Yisrael and did for him examples of everything that he was going to do in the future for his children. V'havein zeh, and contemplate this, understand this. This is critical to understanding Sefer Bereishit. Kach kotev Ramban. So writes the Ramban. Again, this means that every single thing that the avot do in Sefer Bereishit is paving the way, setting the stage, planting the seeds for what will unfold over the course of the entirety of Jewish history. Every single action that they take over the course of the Sefer, everything that happens to them has to be understood on the level of Ma'ase Avot Siman Lebanim. Sefer Bereishit is the prototype and archetypical Sefer, paving the way for what's going to happen over the entire course of Jewish history. Let's apply it. You ready for a mini mind blown? Let's do a mini mind blown. Then next year we're going to do a major mind blown. Here's your mini. Watch, once you know this concept, once you understand that this is how Sefer Bereishit functions, we're going to go back to technically the second story. I think that it's also very much laced into the first story, but that's far too complicated of a shiur. We're going to do it simply with the second story. We got through Lech Lecha. He went to Eretz Yisrael. Good. What was our second story? It's one of the only things that almost made it onto the board. The story of Mitzrayim. What happens? Avram Avinu gets to Eretz Yisrael. And once he's in Eretz Yisrael, what happens? There's a terrible famine. And that terrible famine causes him to have to go to where? Mitzrayim. Now that you know the concept of Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim, sound familiar? What?
Food and oil.
First of all, definitely. Second of all, you're thinking too big. This is going to be a simple one-to-one parallel. Yes! Right? Who is the person who's named Yisrael? Yaakov. Yaakov is Yisrael, and Yaakov has children. You know what his children therefore are? B'nai Yisrael. What happens to B'nai Yisrael? There's a famine in the land, and where do they have to go to get food? Mitzrayim! And so they go down to Mitzrayim. When they get to Mitzrayim, they're stuck in a place, as you already, Bracha, automatically went to, because you were totally attuned to what are some of our underlying themes that we wouldn't have necessarily stated explicitly, but are right there under the surface. What's the struggle in Mitzrayim? The entire struggle in Mitzrayim is over Arayot. Mitzrayim, as we discussed at length last time, it's defined as one of the nations which embodies Arayot, coming from Ham and all the issues with Ham. It's referred to in the Parshiot of Yosef as Ervata Aretz, which can't even be literally translated, but Erva is when things are not clothed, are not properly covered up. And it's Ervata Aretz. And if, I don't want to do it inside, because I decided to leave it on the source sheet if you want to take a look at it, but if you take a look, this is the first two paragraphs of Sefer Shmot. Of the struggle in the first two paragraphs of Sefer Shmot are very clearly all about the same thing. The culture of Mitzrayim, which is all about physical pleasure in Arayos, and Klal Yisrael defying that, fighting against that. When our original Shirim in Parshat Bereishit, remember we talked about there are two ways. There's the Tov aspect of a relationship and the Ra aspect of the relationship. If you oversimplify, what was the Tov aspect of the relationship? Relationship between a husband and a wife. What's the Tov aspect of the relationship? Peruvu. And that's all that's happening on the surface of Sefer Shmot. Is that they keep on determined, they're determined to make sure that all of their interactions produce new life, are selflessly producing the future of the Jewish people, and that's exactly what freaks out Mitzrayim, because they're a culture where all interactions between men and women are all about Ariot. And that's the struggle there, and that brings in the Mialdot, and that brings in throwing children into the Nile. It's all what's happening there is a struggle over Ariot. When Avraham goes down to Mitzrayim, what's the struggle over? Arayot. What's he worried about? He's worried that somebody's going to take Sarah because she looks beautiful and not care that they're married. Or worse, kill him and then take her anyway. So they struggle over Arayot. Then, after Paro takes Sarah, how does God respond to the fact that Paro took Sarah? Punish him. What's the words that are used? It uses a very similar word. It says, "Va'inaga Hashem et Paro nigaim gedolim v'et beito al devar sarai eshet Avram." Basically, what does he give to Paro? Makos. Just like in response to Paro taking the Jewish people captive, he gives them makos. And how does the story in Egypt conclude? How do we leave? And how does Avram leave Mitzrayim? Far richer than he ever imagined. On his way right back to Eretz Yisrael. It's an incredible thing. That one little paragraph, right after Avram Avinu is identified and is defined as the father of the Jewish nation, the first thing he does is set the stage on a Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim level for everything that's going to happen to B'nai Israel in terms of leaving the land because of a famine, struggling with Arayos and Mitzrayim and overcoming it, having plagues rain down upon Egypt to get them sent out, and leaving Berechush Gadol. That wasn't even in my Rebbe's shir. But once you learn Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim, you read that paragraph and your mind should immediately be going, wow. That's the story of B'nai Israel. That's That's how powerful this concept of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim is. That was an easy example. What we're going to do next time is we're going to take this structure, this paradigm of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, connect it to another huge concept all over Chazal, and that will play out all throughout of our learning, and link them together, which will answer for us the meaning of Brit Bein HaBetarim, the meaning of the four kings against the five, and even explain to us why Lot came along. All that we'll do, Bezrat Hashem, on Wednesday. See you then.